Well, hello and welcome to the Grow Podcast, sponsored by the Grow Solution Center. I'm Ashley, your host through the monthly grain segment of the podcast. But today I have a special guest going off course and off of the grain specialty that I normally am in. So today on the podcast, we have Elizabeth Burns Thompson, or if you're around the Landis office or in the industry, you might just know her as EBT. And so today we're going to talk to her a little bit about what's been happening. And her role here at Landis is really interesting for me as a grain originator, thinking big scope as, you know, she is just really here, vice president of external affairs. And so I'm excited to talk with you today to learn about this. I just work with farmers every day.
I do too. It's just sometimes in a little bit of a different, different building or different environment. So yes.
Okay. Well, you go ahead. Tell us a little bit about yourself. And you mentioned to me before we started recording, you've been here since December. And so I know that you've been super active since then. So tell us maybe about what you've been doing since then.
Absolutely. So so joined the team middle part of December. Was able to meet some folks as part of our Grow Conference there. So my timing was pretty good in that respect.
Yes, it was.
And then jumped right into public policy, legislative stuff right away in January, right? We start, we kick off, we're recording this here in Des Moines. So when I say here in Des Moines, I can almost see the Capitol from right behind the camera, but jumped right into state legislative stuff and things out in D.C. and really trying to get boots on the ground. But my background, really, I have, much like you, I've worked with and for farmers in different kind of capacities and ways, shapes, or form throughout my career. Worn a lot of different hats. I've been fortunate to have a lot of really neat, interesting opportunities and experiences. Largely started in the commodity space. So started my career with the Iowa Farm Bureau. Some folks may remember me from way back in those days. Spent a few years there under their public policy team and then jumped over to the Iowa Corn Growers and spent about 4.5 years working on public policy at state level as well as federal. A lot of biofuels work, obviously. We tend to turn a lot of corn into ethanol these days as well as a lot of other things. I think 4,000 products, if I remember right. From back in my corn growers days, and then jumped over to Renewable Energy Group, which those of us that know kind of the history of Landis is unique, right? West Central being the entity that created that. So it's kind of fun as careers kind of come full circle that being able to see different parts of the organization. And then most recently was working on a very large carbon infrastructure project across the Midwest before this opportunity came about. So like I said, have worked in a lot of different facets, all of them in some way, shape, or form, public policy in nature, but have seen a lot of different facets of the industry, both here in Iowa as well as really throughout the Corn Belt.
Okay, very cool. And so tell us specifically, and I know we're going to dive into some of these, but, you know, what is your passion, you know, here working, you know, on behalf of a farmer-owned co-op? Tell us a little bit more. Sounds like it's a little bit different than maybe your previous roles. And so tell us a little bit more about that. What have you been working on lately?
Sure. So the cool thing about the co-op space, and like I said, from my background, have worn a lot of different hats, both in trade association, kind of nonprofit, as well as the corporate side. The co-op world is an interesting thread of both of those needles, right? Because we still do represent our farmer members, right? Which is not unlike the trade association space, right? When I was advocating and lobbying for, you know, those traditional, you know, membership organizations, that was much the same, right? Mm-hmm. We were a staff meant to kind of take the voice and the perspectives of the farmers forward on their behalf. And so I get to kind of do the same sort of thing here. Sometimes a different subset of farmers and some a different mix of issues, but very similar in context. And so what I have been since day one really trying to build out is this is not necessarily EBT on politics, but really my day-to-day job is to take the perspectives and the voice and the thoughts of our farmers, as well as our employees and the communities that we reside in, which I think are also incredibly important pieces of that. You'll hear me talk about the kind of three legs of the stool that we lean back on. One of those absolutely is the farmers that are our members and we do business with, but it's also critically important for us to be successful, to be advocating on behalf of our employees, people like yourself, myself, and those that are in this business and out at each of our locations, but also all the communities where we have infrastructure, do business and things like that. That brings up a really interesting mix of issues, everything from infrastructure to tax to healthcare to trade to, I mean, we could sit here and I could keep naming topics all day.
Yeah.
And we'll get into some of them as we build out. But at the end of the day, my sole perspective or my role really is to help, one, bring education and information out to our farmers where they have questions about topics or issues and things like that, but then also to use that as a point of dialogue to garner feedback, garner input, so that we can take that forward and put it into, you know, the hearts and minds and thoughts of decision makers like those here in Des Moines, out in DC, or even local officials. We're spending quite a bit of time beginning to build even deeper relationships with your county city councils and your boards of supervisors and things like that, because those folks have an important role to play too.
For sure. Okay. So kind of looking back at the first few months of your role, tell me a little bit about some of the key activities or programs that, you know, you've really been able to achieve so far.
Sure. So we've done a lot just in the first 4-ish months, you know, when you're effectively kind of building something from scratch, which is fun. I've had the benefit of being able to do that in one other opportunity thus far, but you don't always get to come into an entity and really build something from the ground up. So that's been really, really exciting. A couple of things that definitely come to mind, March is when it was, excuse me, dates run together. But we held a legislative reception here in the office, and we had exceptional turnout for that. It was not only did we have farmers, we had our board members, we had employees. The connector space was full, almost as full for that legislative reception, I would argue, as it was during the connector events that we held actually later that week, which was kind of an exciting way to go about it. But I think really a point of pride to be able to engage with not only the legislators that represent our facilities. And we do, you know, if you look at a map, how many physical locations we have a lot of infrastructure across the state.
Yeah.
It's important for us to engage not necessarily just in those areas. We need to be engaging with the folks that are in downtown Des Moines, downtown Cedar Rapids, Council Bluffs, and other areas across the state where we may not have physical brick and mortar. And that reception really opened the opportunity and the doors to engage with those folks. And we had not only a good bipartisan mix of legislators that attended that evening, but really from all geographies across the state, which starts conversations, builds dialogue. And that's really how you begin to do good policymaking. All of that starts with a relationship at the foundation, which is not unlike when you do in grain trading, right? So farmers do business with us because of a relationship. We're successful from policymaking because of a relationship as well. You know, we're also, I talked about making sure that we're getting information out, right? A dialogue is twofold. So we want to make sure that we're putting information back out to our farmers as resources. We have a segment that we do called Rural Matters. It comes out in our newsletter every week. And we have had something related to public policy, public engagement in that newsletter every week since I've started. So some of those are more deep dive topics. We've done infrastructure. We'll do carbon, kind of longer form key issues. And then some of them are higher level, kind of the happenings of the day, recaps of what's happened and things like that. But we've got a lot to do. We're working on building out our PAC a little bit more. More tours and visits for our folks, getting legislators out to our locations. There's no shortage of things on the list.
Oh, I'm sure. So I did mention this to you before. I don't follow politics like super closely, but I do know that we are closing out the session, right? And so as we're kind of closing out the Iowa legislative session, what are some bills and, you know, different initiatives as you think about that you were tracking, that Landis was tracking? How did those things ultimately shake out? What's to come? Tell us more about that.
Sure. And I will caveat this, that we're not going to go through everything, obviously, that happened out of the session. This would be a far longer of a podcast than any of us want to listen to. That being said, we'll cover some of the highlights here. The other thing that I want to point to as a resource, again, back to that Rural Matters, we are doing a recap of the legislative session. So you should be able to find all of these and links to bills and more details on that. If you want to follow up from what you're listening to right now to that written material. But a couple of big priorities that were highlighted by the governor and kind of leadership of both of the chambers going into the session did get across the finish line. One of those that comes to mind is foreign ownership of our ag lands here in Iowa. We had one of the highest the highest thresholds is what I will say. In terms of having outside entities, foreign entities being able to invest in our, what I would argue, one of our most valued and critical resources, which is our land. But there's always a little bit more that we can do. And that's exactly what the legislature did this year. And so they were able to come to a consensus on language to increase some standards. It gives the state attorney general also a little bit more authority and oversight and compliance if there are entities that are looking at and making those types of investments. we talk a lot about kind of like truth in marketing, and we're trying to figure out what definitions on things. We look at it maybe more so sometimes at conversations about what does sustainability mean? What does a carbon score mean? The protein sector has seen a lot of this on, you know, what is meat? What is milk? What is an egg? So there was legislation that did get across the finish line that further kind of clarified to what level the state can. Obviously, USDA has a big role in delineating, you know, food labeling and things like that. But there are specific pieces that the state was able to kind of step in and say, this is further what is a real protein versus maybe imitation. And I use that word lightly, just making sure that there's some more truth in marketing.
Yeah.
A lot of other things, there was some conversations that some changes on income tax reform that did get across the finish line late in the session that will reduce that income tax kind of threshold a little bit further. Tax policy is something that the legislature did do a bit of last session as well. There's a number of things. I've got a long list on here, but I would encourage folks to go and look at that recap that we put out for Rural Matters. And if there's topics on there that you've got more questions about, my email is also listed there. So please do reach out, and happy to talk through any other topics.
Perfect. And I think that's something that we'll just stick in the show notes.
Yeah,
so that it's easy absolutely. For people to find. So with the legislative session now behind us, you know, what's next?
Sure. So, you know, every 2 years we get to do this. and it's one thing to be a legislator. In order to be a legislator, you've got to get elected. And we are in election year. So many of the folks that are up there are going to be on the ballot this fall. And so they'll transition out of being a legislator into being a candidate. And so we will see a lot of these folks out and about, communities, parades, you name it. Not only trying to fundraise for their campaigns, but also really trying to connect with voters and share their story. So we're going to take an opportunity to really boost our engagement with many folks and you'll see more site visits and tours. In fact, I'm going out and kind of doing a round robin of many of our locations to determine what our first round of site visits will be. We hope to be able to incorporate some farmers into those visits as well. Really do more connecting of the farmer to the elected official so you can engage and start that dialogue. We've got a lot of really cool infrastructure that we've invested into over the last handful of years, and some stuff that's just, you know, the concrete's drying on.
Yeah.
And so we have I think at last count, maybe we could do a new ribbon cutting almost every month for the rest of this year when you look at the amount of new infrastructure that we're putting out into the countryside, which is an exciting thing to do. Those will be partnerships, obviously, with elected officials, but community leaders, your local chambers and things like that. So excited for those types of events and really continuing to deep dive into topics. So I'd say this is where I would make a request of listeners and readers of our materials. I want to be responsive to the topics and the issues that you're hearing about. And so, you know, if there's something that is of interest to you that we can create a resource on, that's also something that we want to be building out the materials even more so that we've gotten to date, and finding ways to better connect with our folks. Again, to further build out that dialogue as well.
Okay. So kind of moving out of Iowa, you've mentioned that you have, you know, been in travel to D.C. So tell us a little bit more about, you know, what are you watching in D.C. right now, and what does that look like?
Sure. So there's both a lot of things moving and very little that'll get across the finish line, unfortunately. And it seems silly. I think we talked about this when I was on the podcast earlier this year, that we feel like we're running out of time already. And I think I said that back when it was only February. And I'm going to say it again now that it's still April, that we just don't have enough dates left on the calendar for meaningful policy to get across the finish line. There just isn't a whole lot of floor debate days, or I should say the days in which Congress is all together and allows for debate. So what we are focused on, probably some big bucket issues, and I'm sure we'll take some time to dig into each of those, is the one that's really on top of a lot of folks' mind is, do we get a farm bill?
Yeah.
So farm bill is top of mind. Carbon, I think we mentioned that a little bit earlier, the modeling that goes into that, specifically the GREET model, that's one that we are very much not just watching, but engaging in from a timeline perspective. And then one that's really begin to draw more attention, especially in the short term here, has been more of a trade issue. So we're seeing an increasing amount of imported used cooking oil. as many folks may know, we're in the crush space as well. And so what does that mean from, you know, market perspective and what the drivers are in that, or the drivers are in that space? And a lot of that is public policy in nature.
Okay. Okay. So then you mentioned the Farm Bill.
Yeah.
This one's been going on for a while. Even I know that.
Yes.
And it seems like it's kind of been dead for a while. Is that correct to say?
Well, so the unique thing about a Farm Bill, you know, we think about budgets and government's budget so differently. And the way that we do any type of policy is really unique. So we do, you know, 3 or 5 year waterway infrastructure policy. Our farm policy generally, or I should say historically, has been 5 years at a time. So about every 5 years is when we start to kind of percolate of a farm bill. And they specifically do put a sunset or an expiration date on existing policy to try to stimulate so that there's continued conversation.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we have missed, and I say we, that's the collective we, none of us in the room missed the deadline. Congress missed their deadline. But we are actually already operating under an extension of farm policy. So our current farm bill actually expired in September of last year. We were granted a 1 year extension based on just, again, at that point in time, there was limited consensus to do any type of substantive changes. And so they kind of punted it down the road. We are very quickly getting to the end of that punt date. And Congress is having to determine, you know, are we going to punt it again?
Okay.
We are hearing that, you know, I'm fairly confident that we will see some language from some of the caucuses. So, you know, we've pretty clearly heard from the House Republicans that they have bill text and they plan to do hearings and markups. A markup is basically when they start to talk about the language and the proposals in the bill and you start to have kind of that debate. The problem being with that is we don't have that level of clarity or consensus from the other both political parties, which is important, as well as the other chambers. So it's important, as you know, go back to the I forget what is it, what clip they did when, you know, I'm just a bill on Capitol
Hill. Yeah, yeah.
I might be the first one to sang on a Landis podcast.
I think it might be. I like it.
If we can find a little way to find a little bill to put on this this video, that would be awesome. But, you know, you do necessarily need bipartisan support. You need support from both chambers in order to get something like that pushed forward. And we just are still at a point that there's a lot of policy constraints and conflict between key issues. Conservation dollars is one of those. Funding of nutritional programs is still one of those. And if the parties are still so fundamentally you know, apart on what they would like to see moving forward, I really just don't see us getting a bill this year. So with that, I forecast we'll likely, you know, talk about it for a couple months. We'll get an extension probably this fall. And as we go into a new Congress, potentially a new presidency, depending on how that shakes out on November 5th, too, we'll be starting probably from scratch come 2025 with now 2 years behind in that particular policy.
Interesting. So yes. Interesting. And I only say that because I was out in D.C. meeting with some, you know, representatives through the Farm Bureau in September. And so that was a heavily discussed topic at that point because they hadn't decided on the extension. So anyway, interesting. Okay, so tell us a little bit more about this GREET here. So what's the acronym? Why is it important? Tell us more.
Oh, yes. And if there's anything that we have more of in policy is it like the alphabet soup of acronyms, right? So I won't even get all the crop insurance acronyms, the biofuels acronyms, and then we get into modeling acronyms like this GREET. So GREET is technically, if you think back to, way I relate it back is many of us that have helped kids do their math homework.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been important to a teacher that you show your work, right? How did you get the answer? It's we want to get, you know, X equals something at the end, but it's important how you got there. That's effectively what modeling is, right? How did we get to the carbon score? Okay. That is the model. And that's effectively GREET. So GREET is a model that was developed by the U.S. Department of Energy. It is undergoing an update right now. To date, the model has really only gone so far in looking at to the processor level. So think like the ethanol plant, the biodiesel plant, and then beyond. It hasn't gone down to the farm level.
Yeah.
What this update we are being told is focused on is allowing for differentiation in that carbon score down to the farm gate, which is really impactful. we understand that those updates at this point in time, again, things change by the minute. So hopefully by the time that we put this podcast out, it's still somewhat the same. But we understand from public sentiments from USDA, specifically Secretary Vilsack, that those updates or those tactics, farm-based practices that would be accounted for fall really within three buckets, that being cover crops, no-till, and then efficient fertilizer. Determining what efficient fertilizer means is something I spent a lot of time working on behind the scenes as well. So yep. we're hoping that we have some more clarity on that prior to getting the finalized model. I think I feel bad talking about, you know, missed deadlines and missed timelines over and over, but this is another example in which the administration has missed a proposed deadline. We were told that this particular rule or policy proposal would be out by March 1st. I think to date, when is the end of April as of recording this today. So we do sit in a point where we're still waiting. And I do anticipate that we'll probably continue to wait until at least May, potentially June. There's still quite a few conversations going on that. But that model is incredibly important. It will guide the initial stair steps on kind of carbon accounting and carbon modeling, you know, pretty transformatively than what we've seen in the past.
Well, and especially I would think as it relates essentially back to our customers and farmers, right? Okay. So you mentioned the soybean oil. Talk a little bit more about that. You mentioned that it's important for us as landists because of our crush facility, but like dive deeper into that because it's important.
It is incredibly important. And, you know, it's something that really I'd say in the last probably 4 to 6 months has really amplified. In part, if you look up the charts of just the amount, we have traditionally imported used cooking oil from a variety of different places around the world. But the amount of it coming in specifically from, in this case, China, has grown exponentially in just a few short months, which is being disruptive feels like an understatement, really, to the marketplace and especially for independent crushers like ourselves and thus the farmers in not only the Ralston area, but all the, you know, anybody that grows soybeans in that area that's providing them to them, that's a critical marketplace. It is unfortunately likely a result of public policy. So the way in which we talked about, you know, carbon scores and carbon modeling, carbon policy also looks at, you know, oils differently and they score oils differently. In this case, a used cooking oil is determined as a waste. I'm doing my air quotes here, a quote unquote waste oil because it was purposely created for something else. And think back to, you know, the four reduce, reuse, recycle, right? Not four R's, three R's, I guess, in this case. But, you know, something that's being repurposed for something else is being given a significantly reduced carbon score. And so from the carbon kind of economics of it, it's coming into the marketplace at a significant advantage on the carbon space.
Okay.
To, unfortunately, be it a soybean oil, a canola oil, sunflower oil, you name it, that is what they call, again, air quotes, a virgin oil.
Yeah.
Because those beans were crushed specifically for that oil to be destined for a biofuel marketplace. So it's, you know, sometimes unintended consequences of public policy, and we're seeing some of that play out. We are spending a lot of time working with industry partners, you know, our elected officials trying to draw attention to this so that, you know, we can have some constructive conversations about solutions that are constructive, that don't undermine the policies that we have in place, right? We have a very successful biofuel program, both federally, as well as some of the localities across the country. And we want to maintain constructive trade relationships, right? We grow a lot of raw commodities in this country that do need to find homes around the world. And so we want to make sure that we're still doing so and equating for fair trade, free trade, whatever you want to call it, right? But we still need trade. So we want to make sure that we're keeping those trade relationships too.
Okay. Well, you know, kind of getting closer here to tying a bow on this episode, you mentioned we're also an election year. And if you were hiding under a rock and didn't know that, you now know that. I feel like the campaign ad started forever ago.
Yes.
So talk to us a little bit more about, as we play into this election year, what are the ramifications coming in the next few months? You know, like you have here in your notes, outside of those annoying ads, in my opinion, like what else do our listeners need to be, you know, expecting or focused on or maybe tuned into your role matters, you know, notes there. Tell us more.
Sure. So staying engaged is probably just topic number one. I think many folks are focused on November 5th, right? And that should be put on your calendars if it's not there already. But what I would, and it's equally even more important this year because you're going to have so many different races on the ballot. So it's not just the top of the ticket, right? Who sits at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, right? Yeah. That's incredibly important, but we also have a substantial amount of the U.S. Congress, both on the Senate side as well as the House, obviously. State officials, so a good chunk of the state legislature. And then there are some local races. So your local boards of supervisors are on those the ticket this year. So it's a lot to pay attention to. The other piece of that is if we only focus on November 5th, many of us that either get busy, have things come up, travel, you name it, we may miss our opportunities. So it's important to be paying attention to if you're going to file, or I shouldn't say file, but vote, absentee, you know, getting those requests in for ballots a couple weeks in advance. Those are incredibly important. The other thing of that I want to point to is there are going to be a lot of races that also still have pretty controversial or heated primaries. So that in that case, that's when two individuals of the same political party are running for a spot. Mm-hmm. And so you winnow that down through a primary at first. In Iowa, our primary is the early part of June. Depending on where our listeners are coming from, their primaries may fall in different points in time. Some are later in the year. Some are much closer to November. And so making sure that, you know, folks that have a registered political affiliation, participating in those primaries is important, too. So look up those dates. And the last piece of that is I'd say do your homework. Just like we said, we wanted educated opinions on policy. You want to be an educated voter. So take some time. They're going to be out in the countryside. Go visit a politician. Ask them some questions, get to know them, because they want to get to know you, too, because they want to earn your vote.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one thing that you didn't necessarily have prepared, but I just want you to touch on a little bit is I think, you know, if there's a farmer listening and he's in his planter or he's hauling grain.
Or she.
Yeah, or she. great catch. They might be sitting there thinking, this doesn't really matter to me. You know, dive a little bit deeper and maybe they're not going to fly out to D.C. and meet with those legislators or representatives, but talk a little bit more. I loved at the beginning of the episode where you mentioned that, you know, you and Land as a whole is going back to even city council supervisors. Talk a little bit more about how, if you're not interested in the huge scope of policy, how is still your rural policy super important and how can they get involved?
The most impactful thing you can do is not go to Washington, D.C. It's to engage with that individual, arguably when they're in your community locally, and or even before they become an elected official, right? So if you look at someone that you know sits in a U.S. congressional seat, they likely sat in a seat at the state house or they were on the board of supervisors or city council, right? Not always the case, but that is pretty common. So develop relationships up front. Have them see you as a trusted resource such that you don't always have to ask things of them.
Yeah.
They will actually look to you for resources because we live in a day where you can find anything you want on the internet. You can find any answer. Google will tell you whatever answer it is that you would like to find. What you want to do is have that relationship in place such that you become the trusted resource, right? You are more impactful than Google. And that starts by doing that outreach locally, taking the time to get to know people before you get into the weeds on having to make a policy ask.
For sure. Okay. Well, I appreciate you ending with that. I think it's really important to remind folks of that. Okay. Well, thank you to our listeners for listening today. I'm so glad that you joined us and made it through this episode because there's a lot of information for me too. But really great things, I think, and, you know, EBT as you go by. Thanks for being here and thanks for doing what you do so that, you know, the farmers listening can farm every day and that I can happily buy their grain from them.
Absolutely. I look forward to being back a few more times this year. So,
yes. Okay. And to our listeners, be sure to check out the Rural Matters link in the show notes. And if you have any questions, I mean, feel free to, you know, get a hold of Elizabeth and she'd be happy to help you however she needs to. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode.